Well, good afternoon, everyone. Sure is a pleasure to be here with everyone today. It might be a little bit more of a pleasure to be out of the car, but I'm glad we're here. It was a parking lot on 95 on the way down, but we made it. And it's nice to be able to share the Sabbath with everyone here today. And we're actually down in Richmond today, this weekend, for kind of a special occasion. This weekend is my son Lucas's birthday. He's steadfastly ignored our request to stay young forever, and he's continued to march upward, so it's his 13th birthday on Sunday.
A teenager,
I know. Well, as you probably already know, my parents moved up to Richmond earlier this year. My sister Carrie still lives in the area, so we all are going to come together this weekend and just have fun together and celebrate together as a family. And the family is such a key concept throughout the whole Bible that God dedicates 10% of the Ten Commandments to that concept, one of the ten. And anytime you have an ideal that gets memorialized in one of the big Ten Commandments, it's worth the opportunity just to pause and ponder that commandment a little bit more. So as a result today, I thought it'd be a great idea to revisit the fifth commandment. The fifth commandment, of course, is the instruction to honor your father and mother. And I became interested in this commandment a little while ago in kind of a weird and unusual way. I was just kind of thinking and pondering to myself, thinking that if I had to cut out one commandment, which one would I pick? And this is a horrible analogy. Sarah hates it that I even did this. But I think an interesting argument could be made that of any commandment, the fifth commandment could be potentially removed. And I'm not saying that any should be removed. Obviously, all 10 are important. All 10 work together. God knew what he was doing, of course. But in my mind, I think, you know, if Moses was up on the mountain and he didn't get enough stone and he's kind of running out of room, that maybe he could have just cut out the fifth commandment. And the reason why I say this, again, not because it's not important, it certainly is, but because if you're doing the other nine commandments, you kind of are already naturally doing this. Now, the fifth commandment is often called that bridge commandment because it comes between the first set of commandments that are dealing with the relationship with God and the second set of commandments that are dealing with the relationship with others. And if you are truly loving God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and you truly are loving your neighbors as yourself, then again, wouldn't you kind of already be doing this commandment? Wouldn't you be showing love and deference to others, including the elders and including your parents? And when you have that love and respect for others, wouldn't you naturally be in a position to honor your father and mother? And I think this is especially true if we think about this commandment just from the perspective of kids obeying their parents. And that very narrow application, I could see how this commandment could be swallowed up in the other nine. And in fact, there are many other instructions in the Bible that go on to explain that children do have to obey their parents and parents have to be good parents. So why does this commandment exist? Is that what this commandment is all about? Just a narrow instruction for a very small subset of the population, for a very small subset of their lives? Is it just clean up your room, be home by 10, don't tease your sister, etc., etc., etc.? Well, what if you don't have any children? Does this commandment not apply to you? What if you're an adult? Do you age out of this commandment? What if your parents are no longer living? Does this commandment, again, no longer apply to you? In other words, what are we to do with this commandment? And how does it meaningfully impact our lives from start to finish, from young to old? And maybe even more importantly, how does this commandment help us to enhance our relationship with God himself? So let's start by turning right back to Exodus chapter 20, and verse 12. We're going to read the commandment itself, and then we'll back up and kind of take stock from there. Exodus chapter 20 and verse 12. Exodus chapter 20 and verse 12. This is right smack in the Ten Commandments. And this verse simply states this. Verse 12, honor your father and mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you. Now, this is a unique commandment in that it's the only one with promise. I think we know that. It's also the only one that doesn't use the word no or not in the commandment. Even the fourth commandment that says remember the Sabbath goes on and lists some no's and some not's in there. Our commandment number five here is also unique in that it's all positive. It's not about refraining from sin or some behavior. It's entirely geared towards a positive action. And when I read through this commandment, the part that stands out most for me is this word honor. The word honor here, which really the whole commandment hinges on, is really an interesting word. It's one of those fun words, I think, that as you start to look into it, you might find that it maybe doesn't mean exactly what you think it means. The word is kabad, K-A-B-A-B, and kabad can be used in both a positive and a negative sense. And it's used in over 100 different verses in the Old Testament, and the application can vary widely depending on the context. Now, I want to show you what I mean here, and I'm going to apologize because we're going to kind of jump around to a few different verses here, but I think it's important that we understand what this word means because this is what the whole commandment is hinging on. Now, I'd like to turn back to Exodus chapter 8. Exodus chapter 8. There are several usages of this word in the Exodus story with Pharaoh. And the one we're going to turn to is right after the second plague, which was the frogs. And you already know the story, so I'm not going to go through it. We have the frogs that came. It was terrible. Pharaoh asked for Moses to take them away. And we're going to jump into it in verse 12 of Exodus chapter 8. Verse 12 of Exodus chapter 8. So then Moses and Aaron went out from Pharaoh, and Moses cried out to the Lord concerning the frogs which he had brought against Pharaoh. So the Lord did according to the word of Moses, and the frogs died out of the houses, out of the courtyards, and out of the fields. And they gathered them together in heaps, and the land stank. That's no doubt about that. But notice this next verse here, verse 15. But when Pharaoh saw that there was relief, he hardened his heart. He hardened his heart, and he did not heed them, as the Lord had said. He hardened his heart. That word translated there, harden, is the same word. Maybe that's not what you were thinking about when we're thinking about honoring your father and mother. But there's more here. Let's go to 1 Kings chapter 12. 1 Kings chapter 12. This is right after Rehoboam takes the throne from his father Solomon, and it's in a very precarious position where he's trying to hold together the United Kingdom. And he has two sets of counselors. He has the older set and he has the younger set. And the people come to him. They say, you know, your father Solomon, he was a taskmaster. If you would just lighten the load, we'll serve you forever. And he gets counsel from these two people. I think we remember the story. But I want to pick it up in verse 10 of 1 Kings chapter 12. Again, that's 1 Kings 12, verse 10. It says, then the young man who had grown up with him spoke to him, saying, thus you shall speak to this people who have spoken to you, saying, your father made our yoke heavy. That's our same word here. Made our yoke heavy, but you shall make it lighter on us. Thus you shall say to them, my little finger shall be thicker than my father's waist. Let's drop down to verse 14, same chapter. Verse 14, and he spoke to them according to the advice of the young men, saying, my father made your yoke heavy, but I will add to your yoke. My father chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scourges. Okay, that's our same word here. Now, two other examples. I'm just going to read these two out because they're quick. But again, I want to suggest to you that this word might not be exactly the same word you've been thinking about in the context of our commandment. This one's in Genesis chapter 13 and verse 2. This is a simple verse. I'll just read it out. Again, that's Genesis 13, verse 2. And it said, Abram was very rich in livestock, silver, and gold. Very rich. Again, same word. Then finally, Genesis 18, verse 20, and said, the Lord said, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grave, I will go down now and see. Now, what an interesting word we have here, this kabad. Now, the shared meaning behind this word, both in the positive and the negative sense, is a feeling of heaviness or something that has considerable weight. In a positive use of this word, it could mean something of importance, something of value. Another way to think about this would be a judge that has to come to a decision, knowing that he's going to set precedents for years and years to come. Well, that decision to him would be kabad. It would be a weighty, meaningful decision. Now, in a negative sense, that same feeling of weight can be problematic. In that case, it's a type of heaviness that is a burden or something that is difficult to get a handle on. It's overwhelming and oppressive when used in a negative way. And even though this is kind of a nebulous concept, I think we just instinctively understand how this works. For example, some time ago, Sarah and I were looking to get some new silverware, and we went to different stores and we compared the designs and the patterns and whatnot. But the biggest criteria we were looking for was silverware that was high enough quality that would last for a long time. So, of course, what we did is we went over to each one of them and we picked it up to feel how heavy it was, to feel how much heft it had to it. Simply by picking it up and feeling it, you get to know if it's a weightier or hardier piece of silverware, then you have a good indication of what the quality is likely to be. And one of the economic podcasts that I listened to recently talked about this very thing. There's a whole industry around restaurant economics. And you can hire a restaurant engineer to come into your restaurant and help you move closer to your goal or maybe your theme or your vibe. And one of the key things that they do, one of the first things that they do is they come in and they switch out your chair and your silverware. For example, if you go to an expensive steak restaurant where the average entrees are more pricey, the chair is going to be more padded and the silverware is going to be heavier. And conversely, at a restaurant where they're trying to increase the turnover, they make the chair less comfortable and they make the silverware lighter. And the reason why this works is because our brain instinctively associates weight with value. If the silverware is heavier and sturdier, then that gives our brain a sign that the restaurant is going to be more expensive and more elegant at the same time. Okay, so it's with all these examples of the word kabad and the association of weight and value that we want to circle back to our fifth commandment. It says, honor your father and mother, but it means to give weight as to something of great value to your father and mother. It's not just that you love your parents, which I hope all of us do. It's not just that we obey our parents when we're younger, which I'm sure we all did perfectly. And it's not and it's some kind of instruction that you age out of when you get a little bit older. Instead, it's a commandment that is trying to demonstrate a very complicated spiritual principle through the life cycle of a human family physical relationship. And of course, this family structure is a key way that God helps us to understand the relationship he wants to have with us ultimately. There's no question about that. But it's also a way to hold in importance something that has a tremendous weighty value, something of heavy honor. And that continues throughout the whole relationship with our parents. Even as we get older and our roles and responsibilities may change, but the type of honor that we show does not. Now, it should be said that some parents are terrible parents. So I am very blessed that I have great parents. They were fantastic my whole life. Sarah's family is the same way. She has great parents. But it would be naive to think that all parents are good parents or even that they have the best interest of their child at heart. Some are just absentee. Some are abusive, some may have died when the children are younger. So it would, again, be naive to assume that all parents have the best interests of their kids at heart. But that doesn't remove this commandment. There isn't an asterisk given to those in that scenario. Clearly, the application of how you apply this commandment and those circumstances may need to vary, perhaps even significantly so, but we still have this commandment universally to follow. I'm going to focus on regular human flawed parents, though, not those that may have been abusive or something along those lines, because hopefully that's where most of us are coming from. And I'm going to take that relationship and I want to break it down today into life phases. And through these life phases, I want to see how we implement this commandment over time as our relationship with our father and our mother evolve. And then also we want to identify the greater spiritual concept in each stage. Because again, this commandment, like all commandments, is a window into God's character and his thought process. It's not just a list of rules for a very short and finite period of time when we're physical here on the earth. It's a way to use that physical to help illustrate a spiritual concept. So I've broken this commandment into three different areas for our focus today, each roughly corresponding to a different life phase as our relationships evolve. And of course, there's heavy overlap between all three. So these three areas that I'd like to highlight today are these. To honor your father and mother means to, number one, initially to honor with obedience. Number two, to honor with listening and obtaining their counsel. And finally, number three, to honor by their physical caring, by their physical caring. Well, stage number one is to honor with obedience. And this first application is the most obvious part of this commandment. And like I mentioned earlier, it's easy for this aspect to overwhelm all other aspects of this commandment. And I've seen children's Bibles and even heard children's songs where they just change this commandment to be obey your parents. And I think that's coming from a good place because this is a complicated topic. But I'd like to suggest to you that children obeying their parents in all things at all time, while it might sound great in my mind when I'm dealing with my kids, that's not exactly what this commandment is talking about. In order to parse it more thoroughly, I want to turn back to the other spot where this commandment is given in Deuteronomy chapter 5. You can go back there. Deuteronomy chapter 5. The wording here in this iteration of the commandments is slightly different than it is in the version we read earlier. Unlike most of the other commandments, this isn't just a one-for-one repeat of the commandment given earlier. It's Deuteronomy chapter 5, and it's verse 16, Deuteronomy 5, verse 16. It says, honor your father and mother. Now, we get that. But here's one of the differences here. Honor your father and mother as the Lord your God has commanded you, that your days may be long, that it may be well with you, that's the other change, in the land which the Lord your God is giving you. Well, what has changed between Exodus and Deuteronomy that God would add this parenthetical thought? It says, honor your father and mother, you know, in the way that we've already been talking about. Fulfill this commandment in the manner we've already discussed, as the Lord your God has commanded you. Well, the next obvious question should be, how was it already discussed? How did the Lord our God command them previously? And a wonderful thing about the Bible is that God makes the important things known. You don't have to hunt and peck through it. God's going to make it very clear. And in this commandment, he holds up a giant flag to it. And he says, if you do this commandment, if you've successfully executed this commandment, you should see a specific result, that your days may be long and that it may be well with you in the land. That's a huge flag. So all we have to do is find that flag and connect all the other verses together. So let's drop down just to the end of this chapter where God's going to recap for us. This is no more than 15 verses away. This is Deuteronomy 5, verse 32. Deuteronomy 5, verse 32. Let's see if we can pick out that same flag as God goes on. Therefore, verse 32, you shall be careful to do as the Lord your God has commanded you. You shall not turn aside to the right hand or to the left. You shall walk in all the ways which the Lord your God has commanded you. Then here's our flag. That you may live, and that it may be well with you, and that you may prolong your days in the land which you shall possess. Now let's continue on to the next chapter. Well, remember, there's no chapter breaks in the original text. That's just for our convenience. So the thought process is just going to continue on, and it's going to explicitly state what obedience matters. Deuteronomy 6, verse 1. Now, this is the commandment, and these are the statutes and judgments which the Lord your God has commanded to teach you, that you may observe them in the land which you are crossing over, that you may fear the Lord your God, to keep all his statutes and his commandments which I have commanded you, you and your son and your grandson, all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. There's our flag again. Therefore, hear, O Israel, and be careful to observe it. Well, observe what? His moral and his spiritual code of laws, his way of life, that it may be well with you, and that you may multiply greatly as the Lord God of your fathers has promised you, a land flowing with milk and honey. Now, we could cover other scriptures in the Bible where it does explicitly talk about children obeying their parents and parents teaching their children and how to be good parents, etc. But again, this commandment isn't exclusively dealing with child rearing, and it's not about breaking down the spirit of your children so they obey you in every way. When that's the case, they may fully obey you, but at the same time, they may also be fully breaking this commandment by not honoring you one bit, maybe by only doing it out of fear or out of obligation. Twice, the Apostle Paul brings out this commandment, but in the specific context of obedience, and always with this focus in mind. Let's notice one in Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6. We'll pick it up right in the first verse, Ephesians 6, verse 1. It says, children, obey your parents. How? In the Lord. For this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you, and you may live long on the earth. And you, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in training and admonition of the Lord. So again, just to restate the obvious, God and the Bible are concerned with child rearing and being good parents. That's very clear, and I don't want to discount those concepts in any way. But if you view this commandment just through that lens only, then you're missing very important underlying spiritual principles. It's not just about obedience, but it's about obedience through training and instilling God's way of life. And we as a congregation and as a spiritual family also get in on this aspect as well, because children learn by example, and they see others in the faith. And if they see their example and it doesn't match up with what they hear when they're learning the Bible with their parents, it's not going to work. They have to see it. And as a result, we have a role in the application within our spiritual family by providing another model and another example of a way of life that works as individual Christians that believe in, that support, and live the way of life that God requires. Children honor their parents by obeying their teachings and following God's moral and spiritual law. Honor with obedience in the Lord. Well, as the children grow, however, the way of honor evolves. And that takes us to our second stage. Our second stage is to honor with listening and obtaining counsel. Listening and obtaining counsel. Now, the second part of this application of this commandment comes in the transition from child to adulthood, and there's often no clear dividing line. But obviously, as children grow and they gain more responsibility, they transition into this phase. I was a very independent child when I was growing up. I basically had a full-time job when I was 15, and the way that my parents and I interacted changed around this time. Hopefully I was still obeying them, but they weren't commanding me to do things as often. They were trying to teach me and guide me, giving me wisdom and helping to guide my decisions, not telling me what to do. But regardless of where this transition occurs, it's important that the transition does occur. So let's notice this principle back in Genesis chapter 2. Genesis chapter 2. This is at the very beginning of families. And we're going to start in verse 21. But up to this point, there was only a single created human being. It was just Adam. And God gave him the opportunity to do things by himself. He had to tend the garden. He had to name the animals and so forth. But in this, it was realized that he really needed a partner and someone to be with him, a helper comparable, as it is stated. And I want to pick it up in verse 21, still in Genesis chapter 2. Genesis 2, verse 21. It said, and the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall on Adam, and he slept. And he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh in its place. And the rib which the Lord God had taken from man, he made into a woman, and he brought her to the man. And Adam said, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. Now, I often kind of chuckled at this a little bit because, like, who is this for? Like, Adam and Eve were the first physical people ever. They didn't have physical parents. They hadn't yet given birth to any children, so they weren't parents themselves. So obviously it wasn't said just for them in their case. It was to be an example for our benefit, to all those that followed afterwards. It signifies a change in a relationship. A man and woman leave, or they're relinquished, as that word also means, from the direct responsibility of their parents and begin their own cycle. And children don't stop honoring their parents because they're not getting and responding to tasks and commands. Instead, the way they show honor changes as they continue to weigh the value and the importance of their parents by proactively seeking their wisdom, their guidance, and their counsel. Now, a couple of Proverbs we can turn to highlight this aspect. There are dozens or more, but I brought just three to look at. The first one's in Proverbs 23, verse 22. Proverbs 23, verse 22. Proverbs 23, 22. It says, "Listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she is old. Buy the truth, and do not sell it. Also wisdom and instruction and understanding. The father of the righteous will rejoice, will greatly rejoice, and he who begets a wise child will delight in him. Let your father and mother be glad, and let her who bore you rejoice." Now, all of these are proactive instructions for individuals leaving childhood and entering adulthood, but continually seeking their wisdom and guidance from their parents. It's, again, identifying and putting value on their experiences of your parents. Proverbs chapter 1, verses 9 or 8 and 9, I'll just read this one, it's short. It says, "My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother, for they will be a graceful ornament on your head and chains about your neck." Finally, one other example, still in Proverbs, this time Proverbs 6, verses 20 through 23. Proverbs 6, verse 20 through 23. It says, "My son, keep your father's command, and do not forsake the law of your mother." That sounds familiar. "Bind them continually upon your heart. Tie them around your neck. When you roam, they will lead you. When you sleep, they will keep you. And when you awake, they will speak with you. For the commandment is a lamp, and the law a light. Reproofs of instructions are the way of life." Now, there is a quote I heard when listening to a few sermons when preparing for this message, and I wish I would have captured the author, but the quote goes, "By the time you realize your father was right, you probably have your own son that thinks you're wrong." And I really like that quote because to me it highlights how part of this commandment, honoring your father and mother by seeking out their wisdom and their counsel, can be far too easily overlooked. Especially as you start your career, you kind of get your feet underneath you, and you feel like maybe you don't need them as much anymore. And not only that, within our modern society, we often move away from our family. I certainly did when I started my job. And it's harder to stay in frequent contact or even just to be around all the informal chit-chats where you really glean a lot of wisdom and guidance. But this is a lifelong way to honor your parents, to consistently and constantly seek out their wisdom and guidance and give it the weight it deserves. There's also a point where, again, the rest of us outside the physical family, but within the spiritual family, can help fill the gaps for this and add support to re-emphasize that connection from the young adult back to their parents. There's another old saying that says it takes a village to raise a child, and I'm sure that's probably true. But there is a lot that goes into our spiritual family that helps build everyone up, including the young adults, and pointing them back to the honoring of their parents. I wanted to point out one other interesting example in Deuteronomy chapter 21. You can turn back there. Deuteronomy chapter 1. I've seen this example held up many times in anti-Bible arguments, but I really think it brings out something interesting within this aspect of the fifth commandment. Again, it's talking about not only the physical specific family, but also within the larger community. And Deuteronomy chapter 1 is in the midst of a lot of civil instructions about how the civil nation of Israel was to run. there are a lot of nitty-gritty examples, like if someone does this, you need to do that, or this is the pronouncement for that. But more to the point, it's about how to establish a framework when you're setting up a civil society and running a physical nation. I want to pick up this thought here in Deuteronomy 21, and we're going to start in verse 18. Deuteronomy 21, verse 18. It says, "If a man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and who, when they have chastised him, will not heed them, then his father and his mother shall take hold of him and bring him out to the elders of the city, to the gates of his city, and they shall say to the elders of his city, 'This son of ours is stubborn and rebellious. He will not heed or he will not obey our voice, and he is a glutton and a drunkard.' Then all the men of his city shall stone him to death with stones. And so you shall put away this evil from among you, and all Israel shall hear and feel and fear." Now, people use this example all the time in mockery of the Bible, saying, like, you know, if your kid doesn't clean his room or if he breaks curfew, you have to take him out back and stone him. That this is just yet another example of a bloodthirsty Bible. But there's a lot going on in this passage that can only be understood if it's filtered through the fifth commandment. This, of course, isn't talking about a child. It's someone who's reached adulthood. And it's not about just ignoring specific instructions. It's highlighting that when the fifth commandment breaks down, it breaks down a whole lot of things within society. And when someone has gone way off course and no one can reach him, not even his parents, then it's also a community problem. And in the end, at least in this example, the entire community had to take part in that punishment to symbolize that the failure was shared among all of them. And of course, this individual did not honor their parents, but the rest of the community as well wasn't able to reinforce and redirect the efforts of this individual to help them get back on track. Now, this is obviously an extreme example and one that was used on a physical civil society, but hopefully the message is clear even within our spiritual community as well. People honor their father and mother by seeking out their wisdom and their counsel. And we as a spiritual family also need to support that process along the way. The second phase of honoring your parents likely goes on for the longest part of our lives, but over time it merges with the third stage of this commandment. And the third stage is to honor our father and mother by providing for the physical care of our parents. The last application of this commandment is to honor your parents by physically providing for their care. That literally means to ensure that they are physically provided for and that their physical needs are met. And there are precious few examples of healthy families in the Bible. Very few that I could find, especially those that were multi-generational and that worked well throughout, or even really one that was multi-generational and worked out really well. And I know that's not the point of the Bible, but what that does say to me that is if we find a good example, we really need to dive into it. And one such example is the life of Ruth. And if you do a Bible study on the fifth commandment, or if you listen to sermons online, you will inevitably find the speaker use the story of Ruth as an example. But really, if you think about it, you wouldn't think that Ruth really fits the mold here. After all, Naomi isn't her parent, it's her mother-in-law. And Ruth actually disobeys a direct command from Naomi. Naomi tells Ruth to go back and to turn around. And Ruth just says, no, I'm staying with you, I'm good. But I honestly don't think you could find a better story in the Bible, or maybe even throughout secular stories, of examples around us of someone that more selflessly put it all on the line than Ruth did for her parent. They, that's Ruth and Naomi, left what little they had in Moab to come into Israel, where they had even less. And the first thing that Ruth did was to go out and to work so that she could provide. What would have Naomi have done if Ruth hadn't come? But also in this story, we can see the transition into this third application and see how the second and the third overlap. Ruth is very much providing for Naomi, but she's also going back and forth and seeking her counsel over and over again. And when she does receive counsel from Naomi, she values it greatly and acts upon it. And throughout the whole story of Ruth, she's constantly thinking about Naomi and how to ensure that she was provided for. That's how much value and weight she gave to Naomi. Now, what a contrast that is to the issue that Jesus Christ confronts in Mark chapter 7. You can turn back there. You would hope that how Ruth acted would be the norm, but we know from experience that this is often not the case. And Jesus Christ, he had to take the leadership of his day to task by holding up a magnifying glass on how they were lacking in honoring their parents' physical needs. Now, we're going to pick up the story in verse 5 of chapter 7. That's Mark 7 and 5. But leading up to this point, the Pharisees were confronting Jesus as to why his disciples weren't ritually washing their hands before they eat and doing other ritual behaviors. So again, this is Mark 7, starting in verse 5. It says, "Then the Pharisees and the scribes asked him, 'Why do your disciples not wash according to the traditions of the elders, but eat bread with unwashed hands?' And he answered and said to them, 'Well did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites, as it is written, "This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me."'" Now notice how Jesus Christ is already kind of setting up this principle by using an analogy of people pretending to give honor, but doing inwardly something completely different, or only doing the bare minimum. Verse 7. "In vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. For laying aside the commandments of God, you hold the tradition of men, the washing of pitchers and cups and many other things you do." And he said to them, "All too well you reject the commandment of God, that you may keep your tradition." Now, what's Jesus Christ talking about? What's the specific example he's going to use? Verse 10, "For Moses said, 'Honor your father and mother, and he who curses his father or mother, let him be put to death.' But you say, 'If a man says to his father or mother, "Whatever profit you might have received from me is Corban, that is, a gift to God," then you no longer let him do anything for his father or his mother, making the word of God of no effect through your tradition you have handed down, and many such things you do." Now, this action of Corban is kind of a loophole of sorts that was getting executed as a way to bypass the fifth commandment. The practice was to dedicate one's possessions to God via a temple offering, and if you did that, you were freed from any other obligations, financial obligations, to your parents. And in fact, some commentaries state that it would be considered sacrilege if you made this vow and then later decided that you really did need to help support your parents, that the vow to the temple was more important than financially supporting your parents. But Jesus Christ, he didn't just condemn this action. He did something much more meaningful. He led the way by example. One of his very last acts as a physical human being at the crucifixion was to take care of his mother. Now, I want to read this example in John chapter 19, but as you're turning back there, just reflect on how powerful of an example this really was. Jesus Christ had other siblings, so this wasn't exclusively his charge to take care of Mary. And obviously, he had the faith that he was going to be resurrected and that he was God. He could have just made Mary trip over a stone that was filled with gold coins or something like that. He could have miraculously supported her in a million different ways. So you would think that this would be one of the last things that he would have to think about as he was dying on the cross. But this is why Jesus Christ is so amazing. He does everything perfectly. So he led us in a powerful example of everything that is God's love and his way of life, and he did it through an action that reinforced the fifth commandment forevermore. John 19, verse 25. John 19, verse 25. "Now there stood by the cross of Jesus his mother and his mother's sister and Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus therefore saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing by, he said to his mother, 'Woman, behold your son.' And he said to the disciple, 'Behold your mother.' And from that hour, that disciple took her to his own home." Now, that sets a very high bar for us to follow. Honoring our father and mothers ensures also that their physical needs are taken care of as well. Well, throughout these three stages, we see that honoring our parents is a lifelong process. And just like all of the other commandments, if we don't just execute these exact steps, like obey and listen for their wisdom and counsel and physically support them, then we're missing what this whole commandment is trying to teach us together. If we just obey them as kids, then that is the bare minimum that is possible for us to do, and it really skirts what this commandment is trying to teach us. We still, though, need to connect this physical commandment to the greater spiritual principle that God is trying to teach us. And this is something that we must strive to do however old we are, and regardless if our physical parents are still alive or not. And let's go back to Malachi chapter 1 to shed some light on this. Malachi chapter 1. The book of Malachi uses a question and answer style of dialogue to show how terrible things had gotten and how far removed it was from what God intended. And this was especially true in the way that the priests were acting and how much hypocrisy was embedded within the people. And one of the most famous examples of this style of question and answers is where God asked, will a man rob God? He asks this question, then he answers it himself by explaining how they were. But I want to notice this in verse 6 of Malachi chapter 1. Malachi chapter 1, verse 6 says, "A son honors his father, and a servant his master. If then I am the father, where is my honor? And if I am a master, where is my reverence? Says the Lord of hosts to you priests who despise my name. Yet you say, in what way have we despised your name? You offer defiled food on my altar. But say, in what way have we defiled you? By saying, the table of the Lord is contemptible. And when you offer the blind as a sacrifice, is it not evil? And when you offer the lame and the sick, is that not evil? Offer it then to your governor. Will he then be pleased with you? Would he accept you favorably? Says the Lord of hosts." The priests may have been obeying the letter of the law. I mean, they were offering something as a sacrifice, after all. But God uses this principle of honoring your father and mother to show that it's not just a mechanical step in a checklist. There's a point to all of this. Now, I want to bring it all the way back full circle and go back to where we started, back in the Ten Commandments, to show how this connects to a fuller principle that God is trying to teach us. I want to go back to Deuteronomy chapter 5. We started in verse 16. It's Deuteronomy 5, verse 16. That's our commandment there. I'll start there. It says, "Honor your father and mother as the Lord your God has commanded you, that your days may be long and that it may be well with you in the land which the Lord your God is giving you." Now, the inverse of this promise is really just a few commandments earlier with number 2. Let's back up to verse 8. So our days may be long and it may be well with us, but what's the inverse? Verse 8 here, "You shall not make yourselves a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. And you shall not bow down to them nor serve them." Now notice this. "For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing mercy to thousands to those who love me and keep my commandments." Well, why in the world would I be punished for something my grandfather or my great-grandfather did before I was even born? I've never even met my great-grandfather. Well, the answer is where we stop short just a little bit earlier in Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 4. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4, just a little bit further down. We're connecting all these dots. It says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. And you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates." When individuals pass or decline this calling, then the physical repercussions can last generations. Sin, pain, suffering, all of those start a spiral that can be very difficult to climb out of. The second commandment warns specifically of this. But the fifth commandment shows us a better way. It shows us what we can do if we focus on that calling and then pass it forward continually. There are two cycles. One is positive and one is negative. Honoring your father and mother has practical applications, physical things that must be done for our physical family. But the spiritual principles of honor, of what honor is and how honor should be applied, and how honor within our spiritual family that God is building forever, Those are the real spiritual principles. Those are big, huge, fantastic spiritual principles that are all bound together in just five words. Honor your father and mother. Start with your physical parents, build to your spiritual family and spiritual father for all eternity. Well, in conclusion, on the surface, the fifth commandment does seem like a really simple thought. Just love and obey your parents. But if you really take the time to pull out this commandment and observe it from all aspects and really understand what it's trying to come across, it's much more than just a simple one-line instruction with a promise tagged on at the end. It's a bridge commandment, of course, that links the first set of commandments that talk about our relationship with God with the second set of commandments that talk about our relationship with others. But it's really also a bridge commandment that wraps into a concept of weighty value and that we bridge our physical family structure and understand how that ties into a deep personal value of our spiritual family to come and how we show honor throughout our entire full life cycle of our physical family. We show honor to our parents first by obeying them, then seeking out their advice and counsel, and then by providing for their physical needs. Well, I think unfortunately Sarah was right. I don't think we can just cut out this commandment. I think that if it was up on the Mount Sinai and Moses was running out of stone, he just would have had to carve a little smaller to get them all in. Because this commandment really is central to more than just our physical families. It's also key to our spiritual life and the spiritual family that God is putting together. If God ever asks us, as he did in Malachi's day, where is my honor? Then let us be confident that we do know how to honor him because we've spent a lifetime practicing within our own family while working hard to observe the fifth commandment.